So the texts we're going to kind of contemplate over these next 4 weeks was written by Dogen after he returned from a 5-year stay in China, where he had gone to study Zen Buddhism. Now, just before I go on, I just want to check, does everyone know who Dogen is? Like, at least have a little, not at all. Okay. So, yeah. Dogen is the Japanese monk who brought this form, this practice of Zen Buddhism, the Soto Zen Buddhism, from China into Japan. And this happened in the 1200s. And he wrote quite a bit, left us a lot of essays and talks that he gave as he taught through his adult life. And he died, I think, when he was 50.
3 or so.
Yeah, very, anyway, in his early 50s. So we could say he lived kind of a long time for that age. But, of course, from our standard, unfortunately, he died too early. So, Buddhism was introduced to Japan in the 8th century. But Zen Buddhism, the kind of Buddhism that we're familiar with, the Zen practice, as a separate school, didn't arrive until the 12th century. So we have quite a large gap out there. And Zen was originally brought to Japan by a monk named Eisai, who had traveled to China, and there he was deeply impressed by this practice of Zen. And upon his return to Japan, he established what we call the Rinzai School, the other school of Zen from us. So Dogen became a Buddhist monk in 1213. As a young teenager at the age of 13 years old, which was not unusual in those days. Apparently his mother had died the year before, and he decided he really wanted to enter the monastic practice. And so he did. He went to one of the main large Buddhist establishments, kind of a big university complex with all kinds of temples. But over the years, he grew dissatisfied with his training and his study at these at this big monastic complex. And when he was a later teenager, I think close to 18, 19, he met a student of Eisai's named Myozen. So he started to study Zen Buddhism with this teacher, Myozen, and studied with him for 8 years at a temple in Kyoto that is still there, called Kenninji, where Kate and I have gone, and some of other people have gone too. It's a beautiful Zen temple still in Kyoto. And then both Dogen and his teacher were not quite satisfied with their understanding of Zen, and so they decided they'd go back, or they would go to China and study there. And this was not easy, like hopping on a plane like today and arriving in China. It was quite a dangerous journey by boat. And quite often, the boats never made it to their destination. They would be blown off, shipwrecked, etc. However, they both arrived in China. And sadly, his teacher, Myozen, died in China, never made it back to Japan. But Dogen, after several years of wandering around to various monasteries looking for a really good teacher and feeling quite discouraged, finally found a teacher that deeply inspired him, named Tiantong Rujing. And Rujing taught this particular form of Zen practice that we practice here, in Japanese known as Soto lineage. So, after about 3 years of study with Rujing, Rujing acknowledged Dogen as a fully accomplished Dharma successor, gave him permission to teach, and then sent Dogen on his way back to Japan in order to continue to teach the Dharma. So Dogen, of course, went back to Kininji, the temple that he had studied at Zen at, but left not long after because he felt Kininji was not the place for him to teach the kind of Dharma, the teachings, and the practice that he had learned and received from his Chinese teacher, Rujing. Now, just giving you this little bit of history because I find it kind of fascinating, but also just to give you an idea of Dogen and his ambition or his intention at being able to share the Dharma. And it will become clear once we start actually reading the text itself. So Dogen left that temple and then moved to a place outside of Kyoto proper called Fukakusa. This will be in the test, yes. That's a small rural area outside the kind of city of Kyoto, at least in those days, on the side of a mountain. And that is the place where Kate and I lived in Kyoto. We also lived in Fukakusa, which is now, of course, just a suburb of Kyoto. But it still today has a quiet kind of rural feel to much of it. In part because it is on a mountainside, which is really a big hill. I mean, I grew up in Calgary. I know what mountains are. So it's really kind of a hilly area. With a number of temples and shrines still there today, beautiful to walk. In Dogen's time, I imagine it was quite isolated. At that time, Dogen, when he moved there, was just 32 years old. Just 32 now. And he had written a work already called the Fukan Zazengi. But he felt, since he's now living in a small little temple on the outskirts of Kyoto, that he wanted to write something because few people could really come and visit him there. And he wanted to share what he had learned from his teacher, his Chinese teacher. And the text that he wrote is the Bandoa that we're going to start looking at in just a moment here. But let me give you a little taste. This is in Dogen's own words in the Bandoa about his motivation for writing this. He said, "There may be true students who are not concerned with fame or gain, who allow their aspiration for enlightenment to guide them and earnestly desire to practice the Buddha way. They may be misguided by incapable teachers and obstructed from correct understanding. Intoxicated in confusion, they may sink into the realm of delusion for a long time. How can they nourish the correct seed of wisdom and encounter the time of attaining the way? Since I am wandering about, which mountain or river can they call on?" Meaning, teachers would often establish themselves on a mountain or by a river. And so he's wandering around, right? So the people are going to be going from place to place trying to find him. "Because of my concern for them, I would like to record the standards of Zen monasteries that I personally saw and heard in the Great Song China, as well as the profound principle that has been transmitted by my master. I wish to leave for students of the way the authentic teaching of the Buddha house." So, a little bit poetic. But another way of understanding this is that Dogen wrote this for us. He wished to leave some writings that would help us as we practiced the Buddha way. He wanted to make our journey less of a struggle, with fewer detours than it was for him. After all, he had to travel all the way to China and back. In this short text, And it's only about 16 pages long, less in Japanese. In the short text, Dogen systematically, I think, elucidates his understanding of Zen practice and addresses the doubts and questions of those who were familiar with the popular Buddhist practices at the time in Japan. So in this text, Dogen brings forward many of the key themes and teachings that he later develops in much more detail in other essays that he writes. But this is important. The fundamental ground, the fundamental idea from which Dogen builds all his teaching and his way of practice in the Bendoa, and in fact, in almost all of his writings, is that originally, from the very beginning, everything is whole and complete. Everything is whole and complete. You, me, are not broken. And I don't know about you, but I've spent many, many years believing, thinking, and acting from that place of somehow being broken, somehow being inadequate, somehow not quite measuring up. And Dogen says, wrong view, Michael. Wake up. Everything is whole and complete. Here's how another Zen ancestor wrote about this idea of wholeness or completeness. A little poem. You cannot describe it or draw it. You cannot praise it enough or perceive it. No place can be found in which to put the original face. It will not disappear even when the universe is destroyed. In a later work, Dogen, again touching on this theme, wrote, "We could say the situation of the Buddha's house is the oneness in which the essence, practice, and expounding are one and the same." So the Bendoa is going to be bringing that forward in different ways, and we'll be thinking about this. Now, this essay, the Bendoa, is the first chapter of a collection of essays that Dogen wrote called the Shobo Genzo. But what was interesting about the Bendoa is that it was lost for 400 years. He wrote it. It was noted down, and then it got kind of, I guess, pushed in the back of the library somewhere. People lost it, and it was discovered 400 years later. And it's quite an interesting story about how it's discovered. And if you're interested in reading that, then you can read a little bit more about that in this translation of the Shobo Genzo called The Wholehearted Way. Yeah, the Bendoa called The Wholehearted Way. So I'll leave that in the back if you want to write the title down. And it also has a very powerful and lovely commentary on the Bendoa. So the introduction to this book discusses the history of the text and outlines some of the key terms. And today, you know, many scholars and of Dogen, and as well as practitioners, consider the Bendoa the great introduction to all the rest of Dogen's writings. So it's a very kind of seminal, very kind of key text to become familiar with. So now, what the heck is Bendoa anyway? What does it mean? Let's talk about the title a little bit. The title in written in Chinese characters, there's three characters to it. Ben, Do, Wa. And Ben means to put your strength into something, or to endeavor, to kind of make, to exert yourself in some way. And Do is a term many of us are familiar with. It's usually translated as the way, as in judo, the way of gentleness, or aikido, right? The way of harmony in spirit, and those kind of things. And it's one of the most important terms in East Asian philosophy and religious thought. And it does have many meanings to it. So you're probably familiar with the Taoism, one of the Chinese philosophies, but the Tao is used in all of East Asian philosophy and religions. But here's what's interesting. The character itself, the essential meaning of the character, is to face something and go in that direction. And then go in that direction. So, Do is a way to the destination. And of course, each of the East Asian philosophies kind of articulates and practices the destination differently and have a little different understandings of what the way is. So how did Dogen use this word, Do, or the way? Well, remember I mentioned the Fukan Zazengi was Dogen's first piece of writing. And the first line of that piece of writing goes like this. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. The way is originally, meaning from the very beginning, perfect and all-pervading. There's nowhere that is outside of the way. So for Dogen, the way was not a map to a destination, as we may kind of think about it. We are already firmly in the way. We have never been outside of the way. And yet, as we'll see later in the Bendoa, our delusions, our misunderstandings, our misperceptions prevent us from deeply seeing and accepting this, that everything is whole and complete as it is. So those are the Ben, Do, and then Wa means a discussion or a talk. So we could translate the title as something like a talk on making exertion in the way, or endeavoring in the way, or another translation has it, the wholehearted way. In other words, all of our life, all of our practice, the effort that we bring forth in our life and in our practice. Okay, enough of an introduction. Let's have a look at the first few lines of this text. Let me just get the photocopy off. Oops, may have left it there. So this is not the whole text. I've just copied 3 pages of it, and we'll be talking about these 3 pages this week and next week, and then I'll be bringing another section of it in afterwards. So there's plenty to go around. I think I made 30 copies or so. So this translation is one that was done by Kaz Tanahashi and Mel Weitzman, one of the teachers at Berkeley Zen Center. So could someone just read the first little that first paragraph for us?
All Buddhistic Tathagatas who individually transmit inconceivable Dharma, actualizing unsurpassable complete enlightenment, have a wondrous art, supreme and unconditioned. Receptive samadhi is its mark. Only Buddhas transmit it to Buddhas without veering off. Sitting upright, practicing Zen is the authentic gate to free yourself in the unconfined realm of this samadhi.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So as I warned you, Dogen is not completely accessible and easy to understand right away. But we'll unpack this a little bit, and then gradually it becomes clear what he's saying here. And part of the reason it's a little bit challenging for us is that he's writing it for people who were very familiar with Chinese Buddhism and some of the terms and understandings, which are we don't have, right? They're kind of unique and unusual for us. So in these first sentences, really, and Dogen presents the key focus of the whole text, which is really part of his writing style. We find that in other essays that he's done. All Buddha Tathagatas who individually transmit inconceivable Dharma, actualizing unsurpassable complete enlightenment, have a wondrous art, supreme and unconditioned. Tathagata is another word for Buddha. So it literally means, Tathagata literally means the thus come one. But it has the subtle meaning of one who leaves no traces. Like a bird flying across the sky leaves no trace. In other words, a Buddha, or Tathagata, is free of entanglements, free of clinging, free of aversion. Now, this translation says individually transmit, but another translation that I actually prefer, I think it's closer to the Japanese, says together simply transmit. All Buddha Tathagatas, all the Buddhas. And this can be understood as the many Buddha Tathagatas that populating the universe, according to the Mahayana tradition, that there's more than one Buddha. There's countless Buddhas everywhere, making great effort. But another way of understanding this, and this is, I think, really important, the Buddha Tathagatas means the essential nature of all things, including you, including me. A little bit, maybe more than a little bit, but like the radiant light that I talked about a couple of weeks ago at the Dogen retreat. The essential nature, the fundamental nature of all things is Buddha, Tathagatas, the Buddha nature. There's all kinds of ways of expressing this.
Are we keeping pages?
You can keep those, yes. Yeah, feel free to scroll. Dogen understood that in the cosmic order of things, every atom reflects the whole universe, and the whole universe reflects every atom. In other words, the whole universe, all space, all time, is filled and resonates with what Dogen refers to also as inconceivable Dharma. So far, okay? And for these Buddha Tathagatas, which include you and me, there is an unconditioned method or art. And this method is unconditioned in the sense that it's free of entanglements, free of the many forms of delusion. So let me contrast this a little bit. Being humans, and I think almost all of us here are human beings, we're conditioned. We're entangled with the traces of our past, our present, even our future, entangled with our thoughts, our desires, etc. And at the same time, we are Buddha Tathagatas, fully participating in this dynamic, flowing universe. However, habitually focused on our self-centered views, we are mostly oblivious to this greater self that is also us. This is what Dogen is saying here. He wrote, receptive samadhi is its mark. In Japanese, receptive samadhi is jijuyu zammai, which I think a better translation means something like self-receiving, self-fulfilling samadhi. Not that that helps understanding, but this is a really important idea for Dogen, and we'll discuss it in more detail in the coming weeks. But let me give you a little bit of a nutshell here. Samadhi is often translated as concentration, but its meaning, I think, is a bit broader than simply a willful focus of attention. It refers to the settled, grounded, collected mind or way of being. Settled, grounded, collected is what samadhi is. And Dogen refers to this samadhi, this practice, as self-fulfilling, at least in part because it is its own reward. We're not trying to get something from this. Self-fulfilling samadhi means the concentrated or mindfulness that is open to the greater self, the self that includes all things, the self that has no limit. It's the letting go of the sense of I, me, and mine, and resting in an all-inclusive awareness where inside, outside, yours, mine, really doesn't make much sense. It is resting in open acceptance, moment after moment. As Dogen wrote in another essay called Genjo Koan, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things, countless things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the body and mind of others, drop away. And no trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. So this concentration or awareness or samadhi is the only mark or standard. This samadhi, this intimacy, is what is transmitted everywhere and endlessly, and this is the wondrous art or method that Dogen is talking about us. However, Dogen adds, only Buddhas transmit it to Buddhas without veering off. And veering off is what we do within our lives most of the time. Sometimes I think veering off is when we listen to the little voice inside us that says, what about me? Look at me. What does that say about me? Did I mention me? It's when we bow to the eight worldly winds of praise and blame, fame and disrepute, gain and loss, pleasure and pain. Sitting upright, practicing Zen, is the authentic gate to free yourself in the unconfined realm of this samadhi. And here is the foundation of Dogen's view of practice. This is the way to enter the unconditioned, unconfined realm that Dogen is talking about. We sit upright and we let go. We let go of the self-centered thoughts of I mean mine. It's not that we're trying to gain something. We already have it, according to Dogen. It's already here. It has never gone away. It will never go away. It's just we need to let go. So, I'm going to stop here. And now, I'm going to give you a little exercise. And I have given this to my students also sometimes at Simon Fraser when we deal with a text like this. I would like you now to look at it. I'll give you some pens. And I'd like you to mark any passages that kind of resonate with you or confuse you or stand out or sound beautiful or you disagree with. Just mark them. And then, we may not read the whole thing, but at least hopefully you'll get another page in. Don't spend too much time on this trying to puzzle it out. And then I'll get you in groups and just have you kind of share the passages that you marked and thought, this is cool, or this makes absolutely no sense. Whatever. So, I'm timing you. I'll say stop, and then we'll get together in our group so you have time to talk in a group. As much as you can.